Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, April 27th, 1998. In the fireside room this evening are Gene Wallstrom and Marvin Cannonan. Today's session number is one, and it's titled Tanzania, New Partnership in Mission. Let's listen in.
That's what we do.
We have to introduce ourselves. Hi, I'm Marvin Cannonan.
And my name is Gene Wallstrom. And we feel very privileged to be here at Holden these few days to share with you the new venture that God has started in our lives. And very seriously, it all did start over ice cream at Holden. As many of you have stood in line and shared favorites of ice cream and said, oh, and you start talking with a perfect stranger simply because you like the same flavor. That truly is how a conversation started with a longtime, formerly ALC missionaries, now ELCA retired missionaries, David and Eunice Simonson. Someone had given them a week at Holden for vacation, and we're convinced we're going to find out, we've never thought about this before, but we want to ask about who it was that gave them this week, because if Eunice and Dave hadn't been here at the time that I was here, when we think about the connections, because they were here, my friend Cheryl Coolis Howard, who also has been a longtime Holdenite, were here that summer of 1986. At the end of the week, after getting to know each other quite well and finding we had a lot of similar interests and background, Uni, just in a very in the typical hospitality of her own heart and life, simply says, "What are you doing next summer?" And Cheryl and I said, "Well, we're going to bike Europe." And she said, "Oh, you can do that any summer. Why don't you come down and see us?" And I said, "Where's down?" And she says, "Tanzania." So I said, "How many times do you get invited to come to visit somebody in Tanzania?" And I said, "Are you really serious about this?" And she said, "Absolutely." So I said, "You're on." And so in the summer of 87, Cheryl and I spent 2 weeks as their house guests in Tanzania. I said, one of the things we wanted to do, however, was simply to follow them around. We didn't want to be tourists. We simply wanted to see what the missionary life was like. I remember as a child growing up in an old Augustana Lutheran church in Minnesota, and out of my roots, and they were very involved with Tanganyika at that time, which turned into Tanzania, and had lots of missionary nurture at that point as a young child growing up in that church. And so I always had an interest in the background, but never thought I'd ever get serious about this. I was telling Susan last night when we had Vespers and we're talking about seeing things in a new way. Well, the M word has been difficult for me to use in my own identity to say I'm going to be a missionary. I was struggling with the missionary word.
I thought it was Marvin.
No, I haven't. But because I never thought I would be one. You know, I always thought, well, they're, you know, kind of, you know, you sort of have these stereotypes about missionaries, and all of a sudden, you know, you look at yourself and, my goodness, we're gonna go do this. And in the process of being there, at the end of the 2 weeks, the Bishop Thomas Leiser of the Arusha Lutheran Diocese of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Tanzania, someone told him that I worked at Lutheran Bible Institute in Seattle, Washington, and he said he'd like to have lunch, so went to have lunch with the bishop. And during this time, he said, "Would you send someone from LBI to help us start a Bible school?" He said, LBI has traditionally been involved with Northern Tanzania in starting several Bible schools, Mwika Bible School on the Mount Kilimanjaro and other places. And so he said, "We want you to come do a new thing, which is a Bible school on paper, a Bible school that can be brought out to the villages, because the Maasai tribe, which the Arusha Diocese mainly ministers among and services among, are nomadic people. They don't like to go and be inside a building and be residential students for a long period of time. So you bring the Bible study to us." So I came home in 87 in the summer and told our president of LBI, Dr. Jack Eichhorst, I said, you know, one of the theology folks needs to go out and do these, and nobody wanted to go. And they said, oh, you know, kids were in high school and nobody, you know, there was just wasn't convenient. So Jack said, well, you've got a sabbatical in 92, 93, and you teach the Keys to Bible Study class. And they basically wanted Bible studies written at a fourth grade reading level because they would translate them, they would enculturate them, they would add the kind of Maasai illustrations for their world, but they wanted a basic text study at that level. And I said, well, I could do that. So in 92, 93, I committed myself at that time to spend a sabbatical in Arusha in Tanzania working for the LTT. Then in 1988, I met Marvin.
Hi. My whole life started, got changed here at Holden Village, and I never even got any ice cream. It was terrible. And it's okay. We started to date, and it was okay. And she talked about Africa, and I knew about Africa because I'd been in the Peace Corps. I'd been in West Africa. And they'd ask me, Marvin, will you ever go back to Africa? And I said, only if it's at the bomb site of a B-52, you know. I start going with this lady who's got Africa on her mind. I think, this will not go far. And then the worst thing that can possibly happen, you know, I fell in love.
Oh, no.
It was terrible. And it's okay. And I would not tell her about Africa that we, you know, we really weren't going to go. After the marriage, you know, guys in courtship will say anything. I said, sure, we'll go to Africa. And then after the marriage, I told her the truth about Africa, about how hot it was and dangerous. And she didn't hear me. So I repeated it and repeated it and repeated it and repeated it. 30 times I told her, 30 times she never heard me. You know, 31st time I realized, oh my God, I'm going back to Africa. And I thought I could tolerate this for 1 year. And I sat there, and the first day we were there, and I just hated it. Kind of the second day, the eyebrow goes up, and I'm looking around thinking, you know, this is not nearly so bad. Day three, I found out that the Swedish Pentecostals over there have a pizzeria house, and the food was good, and the people loved me, and I loved it. And I think, oh, isn't our God wonderful?
After the year of 92-93, at the end of that year, the bishop asked again if he could see us, and we did, and he said, now, we want you to know that you'd be welcome to bring groups back from LBI, and we want to build partnership with you in the church. And he initiated this word of partnership. And so we said, well, I'll go back and see if we could maybe get a student group together and come back in 95-96 then. So I came back, and we put together, we had several cross-cultural immersion courses out of LBI. I've been taking groups to Mexico and other places, so I thought, why not an African experience? So we put that together. So in the December of 95, Marv and I had about half LBI students, and then the other half were people from the congregations in the area. And the Lord kind of gave an idea of the concept about being Andrews. Our home church is St. Andrews Lutheran Church, where Ed is also a member. And I've always liked the name St. Andrew as a real model. I think he's one of the neglected disciples sometimes. He's always the one who kind of connects people with Jesus, with the need. You know, he saw the need, and then he'd go get the resource, which was our Jesus, to meet the need. And it was always the kind of the middle person there to kind of put things together.
Can I tell who Andrew is?
Sure.
He only got three stories in the Bible.
Okay.
You know, he was with John. John said, behold, Lamb of Christ. Andrew chased over there, realized it was Jesus, came back, and he got Peter, brought Peter. And Peter, of course, got all the headlines, and John was sort of the player to be named, Andrew was the player to be named later, you know. But that's what he did. He was a connection. The next time he appears is Jesus turned to Philip and he said, Philip, how can we feed this many? And Philip said, I don't know. It'll take a year's salary. And this little voice of Andrew says, sir, there's a kid here with some loaves and fishes. And that's Andrew just making the connection. The third other story of him in the Bible is the Greeks come to Philip and they said, we want to talk to Jesus. So what does Philip do? Philip brings him to Andrew. Andrew brings him to Jesus. He's always in the role of service. And we got to learn to do that.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
So then we thought, this is going to work out neat, you know, because every 2 years we get to go get our Africa fix, see? We just go in December and take this group of students over and share some things with congregations. And so we set it up again in 95 to go back again for a second group. And then Mark came with, and at the end of the time, again, the bishop said, we'd like to have lunch with you. We've learned now not to have lunch with the bishop. Because this time he said, would you ever consider coming permanently, coming long-term? He said, we've gotten to know you, and we think we have something we'd like you to do. But we're not going to ask and go through all of Chicago and the whole thing until we know for sure that you'd be willing to do it. And so we came home in the spring of 96 and prayed and thought it through and talked it through. We didn't talk to our mothers, though, but we prayed and talked it through. And they'll come in later in the story. But really came to the conclusion that, there was a quickening of the spirit in our own heart of both the cause and the marvelous ministry of this Maasai Girls Lutheran School that they've started, and working with them in partnership, bringing what we could do best, is how the bishop said. He said, we need teachers. We need people who can help organize and can help give some guidance initially, and then get out of the way and go home. So that's kind of that was how it was painted. I said, is there any more position description than that? And he said, basically, no. We'll kind of go from there. So we also know, however, realistically, the Division for Global Mission and the ELCA in terms of money and what money is available. And we thought, sure, we can say yes now, but it's never going to happen because we knew there wasn't any money for it. So in June of 97, Linda Tiedemann, who's the East African Secretary, a woman we've come to really love and enjoy and respect a lot, calls and said, well, they validated the position. And that means that it qualified for the criteria for which the ELCA is now wanting to be involved in partnership in global mission around the world, in that it's working with women and it's working with leadership. And it's training other people to increase the level of their particular education in that part of the world to be able to nurture faith and then be able to take it over. So what we thought, well, now that we validated, when we said, well, does that mean there's money for it? And they said, no, there's still no money for it. So we continued to pray and to think about how to do that. So we called back and said, well, we're very glad to be in partnership together with congregations if they would want support. And so they came back with, which was new for me in regards to talking about a level two budget, which is above, it's in a non-budgeted position. Christine, I think we know, understand it a little bit, but you can tell us if we're wrong. We're learning about this as we go. But it was,
we're talking over supper, it's like, level two, sure, fine, right?
Yeah, I know, it was using this lingo and she could explain some of it to us. Are we really right on it? But it's above budget, it's a level two, it's a non-budgeted position at this point. So DGM in partnership together have asked us to approach congregations in the Northwest Synod, which we have done, and the Northwest, actually it's more Northwest, Southwest, and now some Eastern Washington, to invite congregations into partnership in kind of a new way to support missions and mission in the world, in that in exchange for prayer support and for finance, we will provide invitation to come visit, come see firsthand, come participate with us in the ministry. Communication now with email, we can quickly send prayer requests and information back and build a relationship. We've had a concept that for a church to have mission both in Jerusalem and Judea and the uttermost, you need to have ministry in your neighborhood, you need to have ministry around in your city, in your area, and then what is the global piece that reminds us that we have a much larger church than we tend to think just within our own community. So we've been offering ourselves as their global interest, if they want that interest of being in Africa. So that's been kind of the process that's been taking place, and Holden expressed interest and in our being one of the opportunities for the offerings this summer, and that's been a really humbling thing for me. I've been in a long relationship with Holden Village for many years, and I've known where the offerings have gone, and places, and I thought, wow. Now when it's on the other foot and it's coming my direction, I mean, it's a very humbling experience. I would much rather advocate for other causes and go on with it.
I think other foot is a really bad choice of terms when the other half of the money is going to prosthetic limbs, mind victims. Boo. Hey, did you guys remember the cover of Luther magazine here probably 5 years ago, the Maasai baptisms? Mm-hmm. Well, we are so innocent. We show up there. Dave Simonson, the guy with the ice cream, that's him, said, hey, we have some baptisms going on. Come along. And we were there. I'm standing there. I'm inside the Land Rover trying to fight against the wind that was blowing so the guy could stand on the roof and take this picture. If I had known it was going to be the cover, I'd have got up and sat right there. But I didn't. So we were really there when got to witness a lot of this. It was not our doing. We're only witnesses.
Do you want lights down?
Maybe
yes.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Just the outer.
Bigger on this thing.
I'm asking you to pray. Okay. I get to do it.
All right.
Priorities.
You want more?
The left hand one.
Which left
here? Now, because we thought we would just be going every 2 years and taking a group of LBI students and local people from the parishes around LBI, we're in Issaquah in East Seattle area. I had already gone ahead and set up the 97 group that was going to be going over. So I was just there in December. So the pictures we're going to show you are those of where the girls' school and the development of the girls' school as of now. So it's very, very fresh. We've also got a couple pictures of what we think is going to turn out to be our house, what we're going to live in over there. So we're kind of excited about those possibilities of actually having a house. Because the first time we went over for a sabbatical, they didn't have any housing at all. So that was another trick. Let me just quickly tell you about the group that went this time. Here's myself. This is Cheryl Coolis Howard. Cheryl Howard is a member at Cross of Christ Lutheran Church in Bellevue, Washington. And she's the one, together, we were up at Holden standing in line with Dave and Uni. And so she was with me in 87 when we were over there. This is Jane Tellickson and her husband, Rob. Jane is one who's been there for now the last 5 years as an assistant headmistress, filling in until the Maasai woman who is now headmistress, Mary Leiser, finished her master's at the University of Northern Idaho in Moscow. So she now is finished, and Mary Leiser was now the headmistress. Jane and Rob are living in Duluth. He's a construction and builds houses. And Jane has been the real key kind of organization person to help get going on it. We have our drivers. This is Agnol. He's a Roman Catholic and background, and Abbas, who is Muslim. And so we've had a wonderful experience getting to know both of these gentlemen, and they're sharing their life with us and become really good friends and people we trust as far as driving a group around. When I tell parents about where their children are going to be going, they kind of like to know we've got safe drivers. Janet Cederberg is a youth director in Our Savior in Issaquah, and Patty Mercer is the secretary at our church at St. Andrews, who 2 years ago when we got back in 95 said, I want to go next time. And so I'll tell you a little bit more about her story later. And then students from LBI, Joe and Tori Ragwell. Joe is a fireman in Bothell, Washington, and Tori is a youth and family ministry major. Jennifer Gorvin is a Christian education senior major. Rebecca Lee is in Christian education. John Grebe is in youth and family, and Heather Claussen is from youth and family. She is youth and family ministry major. Her dad is John Claussen, a pastor in Renton area. But this is the group that started out. This is how we travel. Right now we've been telling some of you about our life is in boxes. They're either cardboard boxes because they're booked, being sent over by mailbag so that our library goes over, or our personal possessions are going over in these blue things, courtesy of Eagle Hardware. They're the best suitcases you can buy, because most suitcases can carry 70 pounds, which an airline will give you for one piece of luggage. Most of them will break. So most of our belongings are now starting to stack up on our deck in little blue cases. This is where we're going to be living. Right in the middle of these purple jacarandas that are blooming. When we got there in December, they'd had lots of rain. If you know about East African rains, this year especially, they've had almost too much rain. They didn't have any dry season at all. But we're living in a coffee plantation along this mountain edge called the Monduli Mountains. And it was formerly a Swiss coffee plantation, Rasha Rasha, was given by the government to the Lutheran Church specifically for this Maasai Girls Lutheran Secondary School. It is the first all-girls school run by the Lutheran Church in Tanzania, and it's the first one that's been designated specifically for nomadic tribal women. We'll talk more about Maasai and some of the culture that is there. Tonight, for example, as part of the Vesper, one of the things that struck me is that we are specifically being asked in to change a culture. This has been something that the gospel has brought about in the leadership of the Arusha Diocese. because one of the things about women in Maasai women, and especially some of the other tribal groups as well in Tanzania, but especially Maasai women, they're looked at as property. 8 cows will buy you a wife. And so if you are a rich Maasai farmer, you can get many wives and more than one. And so the start has happened. This is not a Western idea. This is something that has come out of their own study of scripture and realizing that we must change the way we do relationships. We've got to change the way we're doing our system. And so they have invited us in to participate in partnership with them to actively help change their system.
Now this is current. This is not history. This is
no,
current.
This is...
They pay cows for, what, an 8-year-old girl, and then don't get it for a wife for about 4 years, 5 years, yeah. 6 years.
When we were there in 95, 96, that was the very beginning. That was the start, and this is the first dormitory, and this was very dry. This was the years of the droughts that was over there. But when we came in December, we've had lots and lots of rain. They now have 3 dormitories because there are now 3 full classes of girls. Each class of girl is 45 women, 45 girls, ranging in age from 13 to 18, probably. Because they don't go to school there by ages, you got to pass your forms, like in the British form system, form 1, form 2, form 3. So at the end of every school year, they have to take exams and wait until see if they've passed. So this is the form 1 dorm, form 2, form 3, and as each class comes, they have to build a new dormitory. And all the money that is being used right now to build the buildings is coming from either European agencies, or American agencies and churches. The Danish Foreign Aid Society has paid for a couple of these dorms. The Swedish Lutheran Church has paid for some. There have been American churches that have also contributed. One dormitory costs about $45,000. We'll build a dorm. A classroom you can build for $25,000. This is inside the dormitory. Some of the girls who Upendo, you see a little bit of the idea of how they live. They're built-in bunk beds. They sleep 2 to a bunk. In Maasai culture, it's improper to sleep alone. You must sleep with at least one other person.
What are the quilts?
Yeah, the quilts that you see, some of the patterns and stuff that you see, are Lutheran World Relief quilts or Federation quilts that have come over. So a lot of the churches, for example, we got to see a lot of the quilts. I could swear I could spot an old skirt of mine in one of them. It just looked like it. This is one of the recipients of the quilts sent over with LWF. Here you see the classrooms. This is the form 1, then you have a math classroom, you have an English classroom. Back here you have the new library. This is the practical classroom. This is one of the where they're doing form 2 math. And then you have one classroom being used as a dining hall. They have yet to build the dining hall. And then back over here you have their kitchen. Again, you see it's right in the middle of coffee. These have been replaced and are planted new coffee bushes that are growing, and they want to take advantage of the rich soil in that mountain. Unbeknownst to popular opinion, all coffee is mountain grown. Cross of Christ Lutheran in Bellevue donated money enough to buy sweatshirts and sweatpants for each of the new girls that come in. They get a red sweatshirt and they get black sweatpants. These girls normally in their school uniform will wear skirts. And for many of these girls, they had never had pants or anything on between their legs, and it was a very new experience for them. But as the girls are there, they freeze. They're cold, and they're used to sleeping in a smoky little hut with their cows and with their goats. And on top of them, it's very interesting. You go into one of these little bomas, and they have a ledge about like so, and the cows and the goats are all below, and everybody sleeps above because you have all this warmth coming up from the animals. It's wonderful. You kind of smell like it in the morning, but it's just wonderful kind of warmth. But they're also doing sports because when they're off the plains now and they're sedentary, they're in a dormitory situation. They don't get the exercise they used to, so they have to create sports, which is one of the things we came to do. Morning starts out with this wonderful thing called uji. It's not like Holden oatmeal at all. This is sort of like, Marv, how do you describe this stuff?
I'm sorry, I don't use those words.
No.
it's really a watered down, super watered down oatmeal, isn't it?
Well, it's made out of corn, however. Yeah. It's a corn flour. It's like a very liquidy cream of wheat. It's not bad if you put cinnamon and sugar in it. It adds a taste to it. But it's quite nutritious, very nutritious. And that's what breakfast is for them about 7 o'clock every morning. If you notice, every mug has a number on them, and every girl gets a mug so that they can keep it and they do their own cleaning of the mug. When we come as a group, when we take LBI students and a group over, and this is something that we intend to continue when if a church wants to bring a group over, we will tell you that you will work in a project for 1 week. Because for you to simply to flip and kind of see things on kind of a tourist route, you just don't capture some of the heart of a culture or of a group of people. And so what we did was that our group, we sat down last September and said, so what do each of you do? Well, some do music. Heather and Cheryl both do music. Janet Cederberg is a physical education instructor. So I said, Janet, you're gonna lead sports and you're gonna do some PE and teach them some new games. Because at the heart of all this, one of the reasons why they brought us over and want us to come is to teach English. They want to get the pre-form English skills up to speed so they can enter into Form 1 and be able to compete and to be able to do the work at Form 1 level under the system in Tanzania. So after they'd had breakfast, some of them, half of the girls, this is the new group, this is the pre-form or the new girls coming in last fall, and to work with them and get their English and math skills. So our day started after Uji with singing. We then each had prepared a Bible study to be taught to a small group, again to practice conversational skills, but around scripture and around faith terms. And so we each had prepared a Bible study. This is Patty Mercer, our secretary, doing Jonah with her group. Cheryl met in the back of our tents. If you come as a volunteer, you will live in a kind of a safari tent like this. There's awnings over it, and then you have a cement slab kind of little patio, and you see again these wonderful blue trunks that provide, they become stools, they become all kinds of things, become useful. This is Cheryl and Heather doing the other group with music, and this is in the chapel. In the heart of the complex, they have built this chapel and started, there's no roof on it yet.
Or walls.
But this is one of the main buildings, especially important for me, because the title of my role there, or my job of what I've been asked to do, is to serve as chaplain for the girls' school. And as part of being a chaplain, they don't know what that means. I said, what does that mean? They said, we don't know. What we want is, they want spiritual nurture for the girls and for the staff. And they want someone to devise a program. They don't really know exactly what it means. I will serve under the headmistress as a teacher and lead daily devotions, teach Bible. They're the only country that I know that to pass Form 3 and Form 4 and Form 6, you must also pass a national exam in Bible. How about that? Tanzania requires Bible knowledge for you to get through high school. So I will be their Bible teacher as part of the curriculum, and I will also be responsible for Sunday morning worship service, which also means that under the diocese, under the bishop, I will be what's called licensed as a lay evangelist. So I will perform, I will serve the Eucharist, the supper on Sundays.
Gina is so excited.
I know, I'm going to drop it the first time anyway.
Luther was scared about that too.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I have two bosses, which will be interesting to work for. In fact, but it's really fun because the bishop's wife is the headmistress of the school. Mary Leiser she just finished her master's in educational administration. She's a marvelous Maasai woman. What a mentor for these girls. I'm so excited for her and for the girls to work under Mary. And then her husband, Bishop Thomas Leiser, is the bishop. And so I'll have both of them as my administration heads over them. I will not marry, and that's a kind of a legal state thing, and I will also not do baptism. Because they do them at sort of certain times of the year, and they kind of have these mass baptisms. They like this joint thing. They don't do it every Sunday like we sometimes do it, but... Jennifer taught craft. She was elementary ed, and so she taught them how to use a scissor. Many of these girls had never held a scissor in their life. And we didn't bring paper for them to color on the lines at all. She said, tell me about your home. And so they draw their home. They try to duplicate what they saw in their mind on paper with something simple like crayon. And for the first time, girls have never done this before. How do I reproduce something I see in my mind on paper? Here they are working with scissors. Jane also had to teach math, so we stopped for Jane Tellickson's math class. You'll see a little bit more here of the classroom. Mark, talk a bit about the structure a bit more.
Well, it's fun. The corner is a rounded book, but because, according to Maasai tradition, evil spirits can lurk in the corner. So their houses are all round or oval shaped. And so for the girls' school, Simonson insisted they have no sharp corners. Just making them more comfortable is a big effort. It's really a well-built building, solid, with a metal roof. It'll last a lot longer than most. This school is being built for a one-time building, and it'll stay there.
Mm-hmm. This is really a Cadillac of Tanzanian schools.
Do they have electricity? Is there?
Yes, there's a generator that will always guarantee light from 7 to 10 every night so the girls can study. But during the day, it's kind of off and on, hit and miss. It's usually on from 12 to 6 in the morning.
That's midnight until 6 a.m.
Yeah. But there's no guarantees during the day. One of the things that's happening is Tanzania is developing so fast. There's a lot of South African businesses that are moving up because of the change of the political climate down there. A lot of them are moving into Tanzania. There's a lot of Europeans moving in business. And the economic situation is changing so rapidly that the infrastructure has not kept up at all. So there's not sufficient electricity for any of the businesses. So therefore, they give the businesses electricity during the day, and then they give the villages or homes in the evening.
So if you have a refrigerator, your refrigerator can work and get your food frozen again.
Yeah, they don't waste anything. This is also a society, if they have something, they'll make creative uses of it. And this is an old wheel drum that becomes the bell. But when it clangs, you want to come, because some of them have spent time sorting out all the beans, and we're about to do the noon meal, which is ugali and beans. And ugali is a white, looks like if you travel in the southern part of the states, like grits, but has less taste.
Less than the grits.
Yeah.
You ought to try the uji in the morning.
But you take these beans, and the beans are very good beans. They're like a navy bean. And you put bean over the ugali, and it's very, very nutritious, and it's a whole protein. It's a very nutritious. And it's amazing to see these very slender bodies consume huge quantities of this stuff. I can barely get down a little bit of it, and it's very nutritious, very filling, but they just eat huge quantities. My favorite is chapatis. And if you want to have a birthday or a special treat, they will make chapatis. And so while we were there, because we wanted to celebrate their willingness to let us come and to learn with them, we bought $15 buys wheat flour to make chapatis for the entire school, because that's made out of wheat versus corn. After lunch every day, we would sit together and have a little team meeting, and so we would use the back of our tent for devotions and for prayer together. Afternoons were spent playing games, and it was wonderful. We didn't realize at the time, but it became probably the best way to teach English, because of contrast, opposites. So as Janet is saying, up and down, back and forth, slow and fast, all of these words that they learned by playing games. And here Heather is in the middle of one of the relay races. It rained a lot. It really has rained a lot there. So one of the days it was raining out, we wanted to do sports. We went inside the library, swept the floor a little bit, but we got a little more mud in there, I guess. But we played relays with soft rubber balls.
They want to know where the books are.
Yeah. It's not
there. They're
still
in our living room.
They're in process. And they haven't had enough money to finish the end of the roof things yet, so the ends are still open. But it'll come eventually, I suppose. Yeah. These blue cases become wonderful things like couriers for tea and lunch. We went to do some relay races and a hike, and we taught them some things, and then they taught us some things. As Jennifer found out, carrying things on your head was more difficult than it looked. Ruth Passmore is a retired farmer's wife in Montana and Kalispell, and she comes out in the winters. She's a piano teacher, and she's been teaching them how to put their own songs on tape, or how to play their own songs. And all of the Maasai songs that they write themselves. They can all be played in white keys. If you're musical, that's about the quickest way to tell you. They don't use the black keys. It can all be done in white keys. And it's wonderful, wonderful stuff. They naturally sing in three-part harmony.
We brought this over 3 years ago, yeah. And it's the first time they sang a song, and then Gene played it in on the white keys. And you should have seen their face and their eyes going, oh, and they recognized it for the first time.
Yeah.
That was so good to see. Just still working on it.
They also have a practical program. Every girl is taught about water, about hygiene, about traditional birth methods, and how to have healthier babies. They're also trained, some of them will be trained in how to sew. Some of those that they discover when they come to school will not have the academic promise that they know will go on to Form 6 and all the way up. So they quickly move them into a practical dosage and concentration. Because even if they can keep the girls there for another year or another two, the older the girl is before she gets pregnant as a child, the healthier the child is. The more English she knows, the more she will then pass it on to her child, and slowly the change began to take place. It's not going to happen in one failed generation, one swoop. It'll take a couple generations for some of the skills and some of the patterns to be developed. These are my colleagues. This is Mary Malell. She's a Maasai woman, the assistant headmistress. Angelista, she's the geography teacher. Felicia, she's the physics science teacher. Cyrilla and Angela teach Ki Swahili, and they also she's the matron. Joyce teaches history. And these are some of the other teachers that are already in place, all which are Maasai.
If the girls had trouble getting education, how did those girls get education?
Well,
the teachers.
Number one, probably they grew up in an area that was not that is not off the plains or off the Maasai area. Their families would already have moved to the city, and their parents would already have gone through a social change in a sense that it's important for them, and would have had money. All of these women who's had gone, like, for example, they have not gone to college. They've only gone through Form 6 and then did a teacher training program of about 4 months, mm-hmm. and now they're back teaching. Okay. Most of them have, they've come out of the city. I think only Mary Malell is the only one that actually came off of, was nomadic out in the area. She's from just around the area. All the rest are from Arusha or Dar es Salaam or some other place that have already had it.
Not one of these teachers when they were kids would have qualified to go to the girls' school.
No.
We'll tell you
because,
why later.
Yeah, because they, yeah. Well, why don't you tell now, because...
Why? Speaking for later.
All right. This is Jane Tellickson, and then our friend Cheryl.
That's John Tellickson's cousin.
Yeah, John Tellickson that's been up at Holden. I don't know if some of you have heard.
He was the staff coordinator in, like, 92, 93.
Yeah. His photos are in the store.
Yeah.
This is his cousin.
Are you going to wear a skirt every day?
Yes, I will.
No. I couldn't tell he's talking to. Go.
Yes, I will, Patrick. So, Patty, our secretary at our school, at our church, St. Andrew, says, so what am I going to do? I can understand LBI students are going to teach, you know, sports, and they'll teach Bible and do this. I said, well, Patty, what do you do best? She says, I type. So I said, well, I could teach typing. Well, do they have typewriters? No. Well, how do we get typewriters? I said, well, we'll ask people. I said, I bet there's enough people that have portable old manual typewriters around that would love to get rid of them and dish them off someplace if they work, all right? So Patty puts the note out in our church bulletin. She belongs to a Washington State Paralegal Association. I bet within 2 weeks she had 12 typewriters sitting in her office. Really good ones, you know, the Smith Corona, the Royals, and all these old ones. She had them fixed, she had them cleaned. She goes to a class to know how to fix them. I mean, this woman is phenomenal. So she's got all the stuff, sets it up, and because now they can add to their practical course, they can add typing. And so also some of these girls, as they get up to Form 5 and Form 6, if they can type by the time they come out of high school, they will get a better entrance into college. There's only one university in the whole country, and that's University of Dar es Salaam. And
they it's only got 2,000 students, yeah.
Yeah, it's even less. It's getting less and less. And so the competition's pretty stiff if you're going to get there, and they don't have money. So they've got to have some other way to be able to earn a living or earn their keep to be able to get to be able to go on to college. Here's Joyce.
My story. So who gets to go to the girls' school? Well, you got to meet certain qualifications. You've got to finish basically your sixth grade. You have to be poor. You have to have no other chance for any possibility of education, which would have disqualified the other teachers. And you got to be nominated by your headmaster or principal. So these girls live out in the bush. And when they finish grade school, what do? Generally, they've been sold off. They have to go. A few select ones are allowed to go to the school. You cannot pay to go there. All their support is paid for right now by Americans.
Or Europeans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And later on, the coffee will pay. But they want to have a school that's as uncorrupted as possible. You cannot pay bribes to get your students here. Mm-hmm. Among the students that were out in the bush is Joyce. She came here, one of the first year students, and Jane, the headmistress, swears she never noticed that whenever there was something heavy to be picked up, well, the other girls would pick it up. And whenever they were going to go out and do their gym stuff, well, Joyce was never there. And after about 6 months, it suddenly became very apparent that Joyce was very pregnant. She came that way. And in the first year of schooling, they never thought to test these girls. And it's really simple what you do. The law says if a woman has had a baby or if she's married, she's no longer eligible for more education. That's open shut. What you do, there it is. It broke their heart. What they did is, when they finally figured out she was pregnant, they gave her as much food as they can, as much knowledge as they can, got her a ride home. She went home and had a baby. About a week later, she showed back up with her mother carrying the baby. Her father, bless his heart, wouldn't even give them food for the two-day walk it took them to walk back. And Joyce walked up to Jane and said, "I want to come back to school." Jane said, "You know what the law is. You're not allowed to." Joyce said, "I want to come back to school." Jane said, "What can we do?" The mother said, "This infant is mine. It is not my daughter's." Jane went and told the bishop what had happened. The bishop said, "We have no choice. We must take her back." And so her mother walked back carrying this little baby. And they think it's the first baby named Jane in all of Maasai land. And this is her story. And that's a tragic story. Who got her pregnant? Was it her boyfriend? No. It was some uncle, some relative. Because the Maasai men, especially of the older generation, they have a right to sex every night. And if they're not home, it makes no difference. That's a society that will be changing, is changing. We sometimes are caught between the generations, as Joyce was, wonderfully innocent. And look at that face. She will learn typing. She just burns with dedication. If you got to see the picture in the Vogue magazine, she's the one standing next to Chelsea when they were singing. And she is back in school, well-loved, a leader, yep. Bright.
Joyce is a Form 3, and she's one of their, they like their own leadership from each class, and she's one who sat with me at Christmas this time and planned out the Christmas service. And it was fun to plan it in three languages, in Maasai, in Swahili, and in English. And so she did the Maasai part, and I did the English part, and another girl did Swahili. So the three of us were the leadership for the worship service. Patty also brought computer skills, and she was working with the staff. This is Robert. He runs part of the farm action of the coffee plantation, and she was teaching him how to use Excel.
Whoa.
That's Rob's computer.
Our task was, as you know, to basically teach English, because the more people you get talking English to them, the quicker they learn. And Cheryl, one day we had terrible, terrible rain. We couldn't be out with our small group, so she said, "Okay, everybody inside." We only had one classroom where we could put all 45 girls. So she said, "We're going to have a Bible reading session." They read it in, we try to read it in Kiswahili, they try to read it in English. And pretty soon, back and forth, we got going. And it was a wonderful session, both of listening to scripture, but also of learning English. St. Andrew's Lutheran Church Sunday School had a project to send money for Bibles, because the Form 3 girls' English right now is better than some of their teachers' English. They are picking it up that quick, because they've had excellent, excellent English teaching, and that's one of the reasons people want to try to come.
And that's what one of my roles will be, to work with the teachers of English, yeah, teach the students.
Otherwise, the students are going to be way ahead of the teachers. An RSB Bible in English by the International Bible Society costs about $6, and so we brought money for the 45 Bibles for the Form 3 girls.
And 8 of the teachers never had their own Bible before.
Yes, we were able to give them extras to the teachers, and also to buy some of the songbooks. You wonder what the two guys were doing, because they don't work with the girls.
Who did they bury?
They didn't bury anybody. This is a cement slab, which Joel and John were very, very proud of. Robert was kind of supervising them in the process, because the sod is very, very thick. It is deep, it's thick, and with this wonderful volcanic soil, you can grow things very well. This was the beginning of actually an incinerator. Once they got the bricks and put on, they now have a roof over the whole entire thing, and it was a place for them to burn their garbage. When John was through one day, Patty, the proverbial, she also was our, what we called the, she was our kind of a cleanliness test. When it got too bad, she'd send him to the showers. And this was our shower. It has running water through a little, you can see the pipe that comes through here. So when the water runs, it comes up and over, and it really wasn't too bad. It just was kind of natural heated water, it wasn't too cold because it's warmer there. But again, you can see the wonderful green lushness when it rains. It was girls like, well, it was, we thought about doing a test case for Tina sandals. You know, that we can say the sandals lived through the African mud and still survived. It just got worse. We went hiking one day out into some of the areas, and there's been lots and lots of land erosion. And one of the reasons why they're teaching the girls about agriculture and water is to try to prevent now some of the additional erosion that's taking place.
They're on the path, by the way.
Yeah, we're not off the path. When they go to school, however, they take their shoes off, and this was worship service. They are extremely proud of their school. They care for it so well. They have a guard system of Maasai men that are there as guards, and they protect it because they are told, these are your granddaughters. These are your future. They will take care of you, and they will make, in terms of Maasai, they will preserve the good of the Maasai, even in the midst of all the change. Because one of the dreams they have is they've got to empower their people in order to cope with the economic change that's happening. It's being thrust on them. And if the church doesn't rise up to really give them the confidence that they can have in the gospel, they will be married off into Muslim, or they'll be married off into other tribal groups, and they will lose their distinctives in regards to being Maasai. If you notice, I bought a conga set. Congas, there's one wrapper on the bottom and one wrapper on the top. And when you go to the market on Sunday afternoons, these women will be there in the middle. And it's good for the girls to see these women, Maasai women, who have already have their sewing machines set up and in process of being industrious and being able to be a bit more independent in order to be economically to survive. Just recently, within the last 3 years, they passed a law now that it's possible for women to actually own property in Tanzania. But it has not been possible for women to own any property in Tanzania.
Jean?
Yeah.
Why did they set up in the middle of the mud when it looked like there was grass behind there that would have been...
Oh, because you'd lose the business. No one's going to walk over on the grass over there. You got to be in the stream. The traffic flow.
But you don't sink as deep in the mud in the marketplace as you do with the grass.
I mean, I grew up in Minnesota Gumball, but this stuff is absolutely the soupiest, slickest stuff I've ever walked in my life. You could not stand up straight. You had to really be extremely careful. I mean, it was really raining heavy. And if you want to take a bus home...
And notice the protection from the rain?
Yeah. Or most people travel like this. They got an umbrella, this wonderful dichotomy of cultures. She's got an umbrella, but yet Everything else was covered. The baby's covered, all wrapped around with congas, walking down the street with it.
Here you go.
In the brochure that we brought, there is a woman called Mama Ruthie, who is a Mama, or Coco Ruthie, which is the Maasai for grandma. Ruthie is the same vintage of the bishop, Bishop Thomas Leiser. They went to the same school together, grew up together. And it's been really, it's been through her efforts and the bishop's efforts to start this Maasai girls' school. Ruthie comes on campus at least once, one weekend a month. She shows up probably about every week, but at least once. And she sits with the young girls and tells stories about the Maasai tradition, which is an oral culture. So they don't forget what it means to be Maasai. And Ruthie's dream and has been to create this school together with the bishop. And it's been a wonderful partnership. The only problem, you know, the problem I've got in terms of this peace issue is the fact that the bishop gets all the credit for it, because in the society for them to raise up and to lift up Mama Ruthie would not be proper when there are men around. And I want to just kind of stand up and just go after. I'm going to struggle with that. I'm going to struggle with that to no end. Interestingly also, this girl and Mama Ruthie have the same father.
The same father?
The same father. Let that sink in a little.
How is that possible?
Marv, how is that possible?
Because obviously Ruthie's father had more money, so he bought a second and third wife, and maybe 12 years ago he bought another wife, who's probably 14, 15, or 16, and had another child. And so it's the same father. He's probably got 10 wives, and they're sisters, half-sisters, and they're family.
They're wonderful together. Evening meal is a dish called makande. I actually thought about lentil loaf when I thought about that, and when I thought of it a little bit, because it's a wonderful, wonderful mixture of beans and corn put together, and some of the combination, and again, it's a whole protein. And really, if you douse it with Heinz 57, it's not bad, huh? You can eat a lot of it.
Which they don't have.
No, they don't have it. but seriously, they eat the whole, I can't even get around the whole dish of it. In the evening, we had devotions, and we led little devotion services, and we thought, how do we share some portion of scripture with some of the girls in the red who are new? They just had come in October, didn't know a lot of English. But the older girls especially knew a lot of English, so we did pantomime. We did a little, somebody would read the story, and then the LBI students, we pantomimed the stories out of the Old Testament. And it was wonderful, and they caught on really quick. And so we got a chance to involve them before they were done. The LBI group left on the 20th of December, and I had a chance to stay through Christmas. And one of the things they got the chance to do was to make Christmas cards for their families, which is a brand new experience for them. We brought some things. And then I had the real distinct privilege of leading a Christmas service in three languages. It was pretty overwhelming to hear them sing in all three different languages with such gusto, with such personal faith.
Show the three classes right here.
Yeah, you can see here the one in the yellow shirts, that's the first class that started 3 years ago. This is form three girls with the khaki skirts. The green are form two girls with the khaki, and then now the form three have these plaid dresses, and then they simply were wearing their red sweatshirts. They all have red sweatshirts, but the form ones were wearing them at that time. And these are the girls that were not allowed to go home at Christmas time. The preforms, they don't send home at Christmas at all, because they've just come in October, and it's September, and it's too soon for them to go home. And for the form one girls, there were very few of them, only about 12 of them that stayed. The rest all went home.
Some of the reasons for staying is that they've already been sold off.
Yeah.
If they went home, they would be delivered. So it's better.
How many kilometers would they go?
Oh, some 3-4 days of walking.
Yeah.
Some of them will actually will take the bus. For some of them now, their fathers have become extremely proud. I mean, there's been a wonderful change. You know, parents are parents no matter where you are. And here's a father who sees their daughter learning, talking English, and being able to do things and read, you know. And this, they become extremely proud. So, like, for example, you'll see fathers coming to pick up their daughter and take them on the bus all the way home. And then you know you've got a safe situation from then on. You know, then the child, I mean, the girl is very free to go home. But in many other situations, they're not free to go home. And sometimes it's because of the older women, the older grandmothers, who do not want change because this is the way it happened to me. It's the women, for example, unfortunately, it's some of the women in this culture that are continuing the female circumcision. And several of these girls went home at Christmas, and Jane said they came back circumcised because their grandma said, no, you got to do this, you know. Okay. So I mean, that's some of the heartache in the process.
Yeah, they're nomadic people. One of the girls went home and couldn't find anybody. They moved on. Mm-hmm. They either forgot about her or she got back in the message.
The wonderful thing about African worship, one of the things I like the most is that benedictions happen outside. You don't do your benediction. You don't serve inside. You go out. Yeah. The benediction happens out there. It's meant to be the conferring of power to go and serve the Lord. And so the last song is a processional out, and you gather in a circle, and then you do the benediction out here. This is Pastor Joe Nangole. He's the one in the charge of the. He's the liaison for the diocese on the school board. He's Maasai. He lives in Monduli, so he is really a very important support for this process. Here's two other girls, Esther and Nikoti. Nikoti is Form 1, and Esther is Form 3. Each of them coming from different areas, and so you can see a little dissimilarity in some of the tribal groupings. One is Barabaik, and the other is Hadzabe, some of the smaller groups of tribal groups. Rahema is a new Form 1. Never had heard them sing before. I've got some, I was going to show a piece of a videotape that has some of the singing of the girls and in the background, it's wonderful stuff. And Rahema has a little soul, and so she was hearing for the first time herself singing. This is probably the slide that Marv was most looking for, because this is what our house is going to look like in Tanzania.
Do you recognize you got the Tudor style? It's got one door to go outside and one door in the bathroom.
It's two doors.
It's a round house. It's, 9 meters across, 27 feet, with a half balcony, you'll see on the inside. But these are coffee trees. I mean, every picture you see, we are right amongst...
We will never have to mow lawn again.
That's worth it. And just think you grab your coffee out of the window.
Yeah, kind of reach out, take it in, roast it, dry it. It'll be okay.
The loft, there'll be a half loft in here, and the next slide, but it comes about here, and I thought there wouldn't be enough room in the top, but a gentleman who's working, Nate Simonson, David's son, is about as tall as Marv, and he stood up near the edge and didn't touch the roof at all, so there's plenty of height up there. The one that is being built for ours is over here, it sits over here, and we face the back sort of on their side. But they're doing it, you know, this is David Simonson. Use the natural elements, there's a lot of rock around. So you make it as beautiful looking or kind of nice looking as you can, yet it's the same Maasai hut. They're doing wood roofs and they put tar paper over it, and then they use a concrete aggregate for a surface on top instead of the metal roofing, because the metal roofing will buckle when it gets hot. And when you try to teach and the roof is crackling and talking to you, or if it's raining, forget about teaching because you cannot teach in the roof. This is the inside of our house. This is our indoor door. We have one indoor door and then an outdoor. That's about it. But they have built a wrought iron stairwell. This is also a David Simonson design, so that you go upstairs to the loft, and then ours, the new ones they're now building, will have a window up here so you have a little more ventilation. But this one goes into the bathroom, and this is probably going to be Marv's office on this side. We'll drop bookshelves down, and then it's like living room, dining room, and then kitchen around the corner with the refrigerator and stove. And then this is the bathroom in here with a shower and a stool, and then the sink.